At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, sitting across the boards, my producer and good friend, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Tim, we've got a great show tonight.
Yeah, we do.
We have the return of a gentleman we had 2 years ago. Can you believe it's already been 2 years?
Yeah.
We had him back in May 7th of 2006. We're bringing him on for a little bit of an update. And for those of you that missed the show, go check it out in our archives. May 7th, 2006, we had the amazing Randy and Lou Gentile on our show talking about a challenge that Lou Gentile was taunting Randy with for quite a while about his EVPs, claiming that the amazing Randy was coming up with excuses not to take the challenge. And also Lou Gentile even went to the extent of trying to convince people that the amazing Randy went in for quadruple bypass surgery just to avoid having to pay Lou Gentile $1 million. And when I talked to the amazing Randy, he was very generous with his time, gave us time that evening to talk. And he said, Dave, this is how it's going to go down. He said, this guy, I'm going to give him the time. I'm going to tell him we'll do this. I'll submit to whatever you're asking us to do. And he's going to backpedal. And I said, I don't think so, Mr. Randy. This guy's serious. So now let's bring him on as I am about to eat humble pie and tell the amazing Randy, sir, you were correct. Mr. Gentile was kind of a goof, huh?
Well, I have an ample supply of humble pie here.
Yes, I'll take a bite of that.
Thank you, Tom, if you wish.
No, I thought what was really funny, you know, I mean, I talked to Lou Gentile and had been in his presence to see him collect EVPs and was kind of impressed by his ability or availability, I should say, to get that kind of phenomena to happen around him. And when he was saying that, you know, he had wanted to do this challenge with you for so long and you were making yourself unavailable and hearing all these horror stories about what a terrorist the amazing Randy is and he'll set you up just to knock you down. And you were so kind and consider talking to us on the phone prior to the show. And I will admit, fully astounded that things went the way they went with Mr. Gentile. Unfortunately, in his part, he suffered a massive accident. Where he fell from a high area and hurt himself, so he never followed up on the challenge from what I've been told. Unless, of course, if we want to buy into conspiracy theories, if you went out of your way to have a quadruple bypass surgery just to avoid him, perhaps he threw himself off of a high area to damage his head so that way he wouldn't have to actually follow through on the challenge.
Well, there are numerous possibilities here. I hesitate to wonder about all of them, but he was beating around the bush well before any accident happened. He was not even corresponding with me at a certain time, there for quite a period of time. And while he was not corresponding with me, he was telling people that I had backed out. I have never backed out of any confrontation of this kind, and I've been doing this for 20 years.
I'm with you. Now, for people that are just tuning in, our guest is the amazing Randy. James Randy is a magician. He's a world-renowned paranormal skeptic. That's why we wanted to have him on the show. I know that we delve into the realm of the paranormal and speculation of all these fantastic stories, but from time to time we like to take a reality check. And I wanted to talk to you today, Mr. Randy, about the fact for the last 3-4 years, it seems like the top has been torn back off of the paranormal Pandora's box, if you will, with the advent of all the different TV shows on and all of these things going on. Why do you think that now, again, kind of like in the 1800s and early 1900s, there seemed to be such a resurgence of spirituality and people seeking these answers? Why do you think it's on a rebound again now?
I don't know that it's on a rebound, really. Just the fact that it's moved to television to a certain extent, and I understand that because TV producers are hungry. They don't have ideas, and ideas are hard to come by. So when they see something like NBC going along with an Uri Geller show where he's looking for a successor, this is like Rasputin looking for a successor.
Right.
Can you be more evil than I am? If so, you can step right up and take a chance here and get into the competition. No, I don't know that this perceived increase in interest really is legitimate at all. I think there's always been a certain degree of woo-woo out there, and it's very widely accepted and promoted and encouraged by the TV networks because they get a few good specials out of it. The thing that Geller did for NBC, this phenomenon thing, was a phenomenon, all right. It was the most lackluster program. It didn't have any entertainment value in it whatsoever, and Geller just sat there week after week saying that his mind was blown. Well, he has a very easily blowable mind, apparently. It has very poor fuses in it because he was constantly mind-blowing. And the stuff that people were doing on the program was not mind-blowing. This is stuff that's done at Sunday school picnics. I don't understand why he thought that anyone would believe that he really couldn't solve these simple tricks from the back of cornflake boxes.
Well, no, I'm just curious, Mr. Andy, if people, I mean, we know that just about everything and anything can be recreated now with science, with technology, with, you know, magic tricks, sleight of hand. Does that mean that you believe that then true things like, quote-unquote, miracles can't happen just because they can be recreated?
I'm willing to be shown. I'm $1 million worth of willing to be shown. That offer has been out there for the last 10 years now. It's going on 11 years, and if you wave a great carrot like that around, and it's so easily won if the phenomena are real, you have to wonder. It doesn't prove that the phenomena don't exist, but it sure as hell does prove that if these phenomena do exist, that nobody seems to be able to produce them. I mean, you know, let's face it, turnips and ball pens and microscopes and stuff, that's a claim, but you can produce that. So if I offer you $1 million, if you can get a turnip for me, oh, there you go, okay, here's $1 million. Seems very simple, that if something really exists, somebody should be able to come forward with it. But then, of course, we get all the nonsense about, well, I can't do it under pressure. They make a profession of it. They do it constantly for customers, for paying customers, and yet they can't do it under pressure. Get out of here.
I agree with you. Now, let me ask what your thoughts are on this aspect of weird phenomena. There's a gentleman that goes by the name Prophet Yahweh. Are you familiar with him?
Wait a minute. You called him a gentleman. I have no evidence to that at all. I think he's a nutcase myself.
Well, have you seen footage? I mean, he's been in front of actual news cameras where he starts his prayer and things appear out of the sky.
You can get news cameras to sit still and take photographs of a dead butterfly if you try hard enough. The fact that he has news cameras there, they go to photograph any nutcase. Because it makes news, and people laugh at it, and they laugh at Yahweh, too. Now, the solution to his mysteries is not all that hard to come by. First of all, he always works downwind, and he always points in the direction of where a balloon would be coming from if someone had released it half a mile away, and there are balloons very easily available, and when you photograph what he produces, they look exactly like balloons. Now, that's a combination of factors that seems evidential to me. Because there's no evidence that they're UFOs.
Well, now, the one newscast that I've seen was actually done in Vegas. The news crew took him to an undisclosed location, didn't let him know where they were going to take him, so there would be no pre-arrangement of balloons or remote control flying craft, and they were able to produce it. The newscaster himself was kind of blown away. The reporter on the site was blown away by watching the silver ball come down and kind of go back up into the skies again. Now, what do you take of doing a situation like that? I mean, are you open? Is that something that would fall under the challenge? If you could take this guy to anywhere you choose and something like this were still to happen, would you consider that phenomena that you would accept as being out of our realm? Or would you, you know, I mean, how would that be?
That'd be fine. Sure, I'd accept that. No problem. I'd
told him that long
now,
ago.
Now, would you need it to come down and high sign?
He
just
has to tell
just make
me
it appear.
What he's going to do.
Okay.
First of all, I don't require that he do any specific thing. It doesn't have to spell a word out in the sky or advertise a product from the local 7-Eleven. It doesn't have to do any of those things. It depends on what he says it will do. But he won't make a claim because he's Yahweh, and Yahweh doesn't need to make claims. Well, if he wants the $1 million, yes, he has to.
All right, well, I understand that. Has there been anybody in the 20 years, or I'm sorry, what'd you say, 10, 11 years that you started the $1 million, has there been anybody that you've thought might have a legitimate shot at it with things that you had reviewed leading up to that, you know, challenge?
No, because usually they're doing the same tired old thing. You know, most of them recently have been about orbs, which are photographed in graveyards.
Yeah,
they
right.
can also be photographed in a barn. If nobody's died in that barn in a while, where did they come from? Dead horses. I don't know.
Right.
And it's a phenomenon of digital cameras. It always uses a flash, and that's the way orbs are produced. And photographers are going crazy with orbs because they got to have a dust-free atmosphere in order to use digital photography with flash. It's an artifact of digital photography. But there's no spiritual value to them whatsoever, unless you consider a moth or something like that to be extraterrestrial.
Well, I totally agree with you. Orbs is one of my biggest bones of contention. Tim and I get hundreds of emails on a weekly basis of people wanting us to analyze their photographs, and I send it back saying it's dust, you're outside, everybody's wearing parkas, it's your breath, it's cigarette smoke, it's simple mistakes that are being made.
And raindrops and snowflakes and various other things do exactly the same thing.
Exactly. Now, with sleight of hand and being a magician and doing the things that you've done and seen, there was a belief for a long time that there were some quote-unquote magicians that were able to tap into strange places and get information that there was just no way to understand. Has there ever been somebody in the field of magic that's done something that even leaves the Amazing Randy scratching his head saying, wow, that I can't even begin to fathom how he could pull something like that off?
The field of magic, you mean the field of conjuring. You're not
talking
about
right.
doing real magic. You're talking about doing illusions. And
right.
Because that's the business that I'm in, frankly, and I don't make any claim that it's the real thing. I say that it's done for purposes of entertainment. And, and painting is done, and tap dancing and various other things are done for purposes of entertainment, but you don't claim that they're paranormal. No, I've never been puzzled by any of these things. Now, occasionally, something has given me pause because I just can't figure it out at the moment. If I see it a second time, I say, oh, okay, because sometimes the crucial evidence escaped me. But the second time I see it, I know what to watch for. I know what the possibilities are, and it's always solvable. That's only because I've had vast experience in the field, and there's nothing new under the sun, as they say. And certainly in the field of conjuring, conjuring has not kept up with modern technology because there are all kinds of things. I saw things just a few weeks ago at the MIT Media Lab, which would blow the average magician right out of the water. Some amazing things are all technologically explainable. They're perfectly ordinary, and the guys at MIT don't claim that they're paranormal or they can't be explained, of course, because they're scientists and graduate students who are dedicated to scientific thinking, and they'll easily explain to you how the things are done. But the point is that if you don't understand, well, Arthur C. Clarke said it Sir Arthur C. Clarke, now deceased, said it years ago, any sufficiently advanced technology is to one unfamiliar with the technology, magic. And he's quite correct. If you don't know how a thing is done, and it is a result of technology, if you don't understand that at all, then it would appear to you to be apparently magic. And I mean magic, I mean the control of nature by supernatural means.
What is your take? Now, am I correct on this? I keep hearing different news reports on this. Is the $1 million challenge ending within the next year or two?
No, it's ending, shortly, within the next 2 years. It ends on March 6th, 2012.
Okay, 2012. So you're going to end it before the end of the world on December 21st, 2012.
Yeah, I want to beat that because I wouldn't want to be unfair. You know?
Oh, I understand. Then you're going to just take that million and live it up for the next 4 or 5 months, right?
Oh, I'm going to have a good time. Oh, stand back, McDonald's.
Now, you've, people respected Houdini for doing what he did and debunking mediums and psychics and kind of going out and doing that. A lot of other people then turned it on to the fact that he had kind of run his course as a magician and wasn't offering anything new that anybody else couldn't reproduce, so he simply had to go to a different side of things to get notoriety and fame. How do you answer those reports, and has that happened to you as well? I mean, do you feel that it's just you've kind of hit your wall with being able?
No, Houdini suffered greatly from the loss of his mother. He was a mom's boy. There's no question of it.
Mm-hmm.
He actually doted on his mother, who had sacrificed a great deal of her life to raise her kids, and he owed her. And when she when he was in Europe and she died, he felt that he had abandoned her, and he rushed back to America, and he went into a blue funk for quite a few years there. Now, the rumor started well after that, that he was going to the spiritualist to try to make contact with his mother. No, that's not the case at all. A lot of spiritualists came to him and said, oh, we've contacted your mother, then brought him messages. The thing that struck him about that was that they were all in English, and his mother had never spoken a word of English in her life. But then they said, oh, in heaven, everyone speaks English, of course. And I can't imagine any other venue in heaven. You'd have to speak English. Why would you speak a foreign tongue, you know? But anyway, Houdini was infuriated by the fact that these people were pretending to bring back the spirit of his mother. And he determined to do something about it and look into them. And he already knew the method that they used because he and his wife, Bess, back at the turn of the century, had been doing a mind-reading act, a sort of a spiritualist act, on various variety stages around the country, and very successful. They called it Fooling with the Spirits was the name of the act, and they pretended to be doing a spiritualism act. But they did it in good fun, and they never tried to tell anybody it was the real thing.
With that...
was not fooled by these people at all.
Do you feel confident that in what you do, in sleight of hand and understanding human nature, can you pull off pretty good cold readings yourself? Have you done that?
No, I cannot, unless I'm unknown. If the victim doesn't know who it is who's doing the cold reading, that's pretty hard to find because I'm rather well known. The point is that the victim, the sucker, the mark, as we say in the carnival trade,
sure,
has to believe that the person is genuine, or the person can't perform properly, because if they know from the beginning that it's trickery, they spot all the tricks. But when it's somebody like John Edward or Sylvia Brown, even though the tricks are very, very evident, they don't look for them. They believe that it's true, and they need to believe that it's true. They don't just want it to be true. They need it to be true, and they accept it, and in doing that, they make a grievous error.
What are the signals people can watch for to see when something, in your opinion, is faked?
First of all, they charge money. That's the first rule. If they don't charge money, then you may have the right and the real thing. I've never found anyone that didn't charge money so far, except some amateurs who want some sort of a prestige in their local bridge club or something like that. And you get people doing this sort of thing. That doesn't usually last very long because they aren't very good at it. But it's pretty well, if it's successful or appears to be successful, in my estimation, you can look at it as a fake. That doesn't mean that you'll know how it's done because you've got to study the art before you know how it's done. But some of these things are very, very evident. For example, now, why does John Edward get ghosts who whisper such vapid things to him? Now, I think that if the ghost of my deceased father-in-law were to come back and whisper to John Edward, my name is John, you see, then I might be impressed. But what he does, it seems, my name starts with J or B. What kind of a game is this? Is it 20 questions? Yes, it's the old game of 20 questions. You mess around until you come up with the right answer. You try to guess as best you can. And remember, the victim is always going to remember the hitch, but never the misses. I had one example in England with a woman named Maureen Flynn was her name. She's a very famous medium, or was at that time. I don't know whether she is now, in England. And I wiped her out on my Granada TV program there. There was a fellow who sent me an audio tape of a reading she did for him, and he was so passionate. He said, oh, this proves she's a real thing. Well, I transcribed the tape and made notes from it. It's an audio tape.
Mm-hmm.
And then Maureen Flynn and the gentleman appeared on my program. And I said to the gentleman, I said, what impressed you about this so much? And he said, well, she called out the name of my mother. And she couldn't possibly have known the name of my mother, but she hit it bang on like that. And he said, that proved it to me. And I said, wait a minute. How many other names did she mention? And he said, oh, no, only my mother's name. Well, then I went through my notes, and I came up with a sheet of paper, and I said, tell me if you recognize any of these names. And I read them off. I think it was 17 names that she had mentioned during the reading, and he kept shaking his head and smiling and saying, no, 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 no. And I said, but they're all on the transcript right here, and here is a copy of the transcript. And I handed it to him. He threw it on the floor, and he said, I don't need to read the transcript. I know what she told me. Well, he didn't. because she had given out all of these names, and none of them were Doris, which was his mother's name, because he said to her, she said to him, there's a rather matronly-looking lady standing right behind you, and she has gray hair. Could that be your mother? And he says, yes, my mother, Doris. He gave her the name, and yet his memory of the thing was that she gave it to him, and Doris did not appear in that transcript or in the recording anywhere. And all those other names he had forgotten that she guessed at because they weren't the right names. They only remember the things that hit. They never remember the failures.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, you made a comment that, you know, one of the first clues is if they charge. Why would charging for a gift that you've been given of divination or communication, why would you consider that to be a sign of a fraud or a charlatan? I mean, wouldn't it be just like...
It'd be something to look for. I mean, to look out for. I would get the hairs on the back of my neck up the moment they did that. It doesn't prove anything, of course. It's the performance that proves it one way or the other.
Right, but my point being is, you know, I mean, you know, Barbara Streisand is born with the gift of a beautiful singing voice. Should she not charge for people to come hear
absolutely.
Her sing?
Absolutely. No. But it does get your attention. I mean, that's something that rings a little bell in the back of my head. It's one of the many little rings. I get a ringing. They're so loud I can hardly hear myself think as these people go on. No, but it's an indication. It's a kind of an indication which would tell me to be more alert as soon as I hear that.
Okay. And do you have a stance, or I'm curious what your thoughts are on the fact that law enforcement seems to be using more and more people that claim to be sensitive on cases to try to, you know, glean an extra bit of information, and they seem to get pretty good hits by some of these
people. Well, I'm glad that you said they seem to be.
Right.
Because I've talked to endless law enforcement people, including Scotland Yard in London, and they said, no, we never use psychic. But what does happen, you see, is that the psychic will go around to the police department, and they say, that little boy that went missing there last Friday, I know something about that. They have to sit the person down. So the person sits down with a tape recording and says, I get the color red connected with this and a double letter of some kind, like a double R or a double L maybe, I'm not sure. And I smell water. There's something like water and salt. Salt is connected with, and electricity. I'm getting electricity as well. And I get something like a car, like a small car of a light color. I can't make out... And they go on and on and on like this for 90 minutes in some cases. And then later on, if it turns out that the fellow's family has a double letter in its name, they say, see, see? And of course, the police will tend to look at that and say, yeah, that's significant. They forget about the misses. That's the big thing that the so-called psychics have got going for them. Anytime they miss, they forget that. They just brush it aside, and they look for the hits. And that's exactly the way these people get successes. But in most cases, the vast majority of cases, the police don't go to psychics. The psychics go to the police. And if they do, the police have to sit down and listen to what they say because they might really know something.
Are you, I know, or at least it's reported that you know, like Houdini was actively out there trying to pursue to debunk people. I know that you're not out there doing that. You're allowing people to come to you to debunk themselves.
We do not debunk. That's because to debunk something would mean that we already have made up our minds it's not true. I'm going to show you that it's not true. We don't debunk, we investigate. And if it's true, the people can get $1 million. It's there. And, of course, the rumor is out there that, oh, there never was any $1 million. No, he's just lying about that. Well, we offer them to send us a fax or send us an email or a written letter or whatever, and we'll send you a copy of the statement from Goldman Sachs, the James Randi Educational Foundation prize account, is at least $1 million. It's about 1.4 or something at the moment. But it's there, and we can prove it and give you the account number and the whole business. But no one, now I repeat, no one has ever asked to see that evidence. But they do go out and tell the story that there's no $1 million. We've never sent out a copy of that statement from Goldman Sachs. We have printed copies, and we discard them every month, and we put in the latest monthly statement. Or is it sent to us every 2 months? I've forgotten now. But we get the account with the total on it, and it's got the account number and the date on everything. No one has ever asked for one of those sheets of paper, ever. Isn't that strange?
How many people on a yearly basis actually follow through and take the challenge?
Anywhere from 3 to 400. It's highly variable.
You mean 300 to 400, or anywhere from just three people to 400 people?
Okay. It's highly variable. We may go months without one application. And then if an article comes up in Lithuania, as it did a couple of years ago, an article comes up from local press and they haven't heard about it, we get as many as 40 or 50 in a day. They just pour in, and visitors actually come from Lithuania, if you can believe that, to the front door to be tested. But then we go for months without anything happening, without anybody making any application. But if it hits the news, especially in a minor country somewhere around the world, the Lithuanians are all going to write me letters now.
Don't worry, we don't have a big contingency of listeners in Lithuania.
There you go. Okay, really, I'm surprised. But it's a case of how much publicity it gets at the moment, or if it makes some news on television, in which case we get a raft of them. They just pour in.
What are the mainstays of the challenges? Are they all psychic abilities or the ability to bend spoons with their minds? I mean,
the vast majority of them, a good 80% of them, are for dowsing, that is, finding water or lost children or gold or whatever you want with a dowsing stick, a bent piece of willow or hazel or a coat hanger rods or a pendulum or whatever. It's the ideomotor reaction. It's a simple psychological delusion that people have, that they think they can find this sort of thing with dowsing rods, and the dowsers are by far the greatest claimants. The American Society of Dowsing, you might be interested to know, has a specific note in their articles of incorporation where they say, do not respond to any offer from James Randi, because they don't want to be tested. They have a delusion going for them. They enjoy it, and it's something they think they can do, and they don't want to find out whether they can really do it or not.
How can you explain to us, what is the challenge then? If these people come to you, what do you make them do to prove that they have the ability to
do? We don't make them do anything. They have to tell us in advance what they can do, under what circumstances, with what accuracy, and then we test them for that claim. They have to make the claim. I don't say there's no such thing as dowsing or telepathy or any of these things. I simply say, you say there is, do it.
Okay, and well, that's my question. Do you just take them out to some undisclosed area and they have to show you where the water is or where the gold piece is? Do you bury a gold piece somewhere? I mean, how does it...
No, they have to say what the test will be. They have to outline the quality of the thing. Can they find gold? Can they find water? Under what circumstances? With what accuracy? They have to give us all the parameters of the thing, and they should know what they can do. You know, if I say I can play the violin, I can tell you under what circumstances. Underwater, standing on my head, whatever. I should be able to tell you under what circumstances and what pieces I can play. So we just leave it to them. They have to design the test. And in the vast majority of cases, we don't do the test. We turn them over to some academic group that they agree will be fair and proper in their encounter with the so-called psychic. And we don't do it at all because they say, oh, James Randi is a trickster. He'll fool me. Well, I'm sorry. I won't go anywhere near it then. And most of these things are done in other countries.
Have you ever been out to places that are reported to be haunted, where apparitions are being seen on a regular basis?
I slept in two haunted houses, one in New England, one up in Canada, and it was a little uncomfortable because it was drafty, but I slept all right, and no weird things happened to me.
And is that something, how do you deal with that on reports of hauntings? Do you have people that go out in those areas under your name?
They have to say what they can do. What will be proof of their claim? I don't make the rules. They have to make the rules. If they say they can produce disembodied spirits or messages from disembodied spirits or recordings that can't be accounted for by other simple means, do it. You know, Lou Gentili, for example, was making all these claims very loudly over a period of months and months, and he got louder and louder and more obstreperous, and then suddenly vanished, of course, as we know. But these people go out to do these ghost hunting things, as Lou did, I'm sure. Well, I may never find out. I don't know. But they go out with instruments that are far overtuned. And since the atmosphere around us, the electromagnetic spectrum, I should say, is filled with cell phones, taxi calls, police calls, fire engines, emergency things, burglar alarms, all kinds of signals are ringing through the electromagnetic spectrum all the time. They tune them up far too high, so they're overly sensitive, and anything that happens within a mile or two registers on there. And if it's a weird sound, they say, how do you explain that?
Right. But I've been in front of a large group of people while we're doing EVP work at some of these locations. You know, I'm one of the charlatans that take people out to haunted locations to see if we can find anything. And whereas I do bill it as entertainment purposes only as well, just to go out and have fun and try to see if there is something going on there. I've seen things that, you know, I mean, we get direct response to answers at certain locations to questions. That, to me, I love EVPs, unlike you, I'm sure, but I'm a skeptic in the sense that I do understand there's a lot of signals and more every day with satellites, microwave technology, cell phones, radio CBs, all these different things that we're picking up on it. But when I've actually been able to hear a direct response that's not just a yes, no, or a number, which are the most commonly heard things on radio waves, when we get a direct hit to a question that we get, you know, I mean, that to me is kind of an astounding point. Now, I will admit that when you do get things like that, it's very few and far between that they come through that clear that you can actually understand it, and it's not a form of matrixing, which is your brain. I'm saying this, of course, for the listeners, not for you, but it's your brain trying to rationalize or make sense of random archaic noise.
Which is pattern recognition is very important for our survival and for our information, of course.
With that, though, has there ever been somebody that's been able to produce a voice that seems to answer at least one of 10 questions for you?
I hear these things all the time. I'm getting reports of them all the time. But they never come around to produce it. I'm willing to be shown. But I'm sitting here waiting. I'm waiting.
Well, do they have to come to your location, or would you go to the haunted location where they claim to get this?
It depends on what they require. If they require that I go there, I go there. If they don't require that I go there and somebody else does it, then they do it. It all depends on what they're claiming. They have to give us the parameters of the thing.
Okay, well, that's great to know. See, that's something that, you know, because I do have some people, I think there's a lot of misinterpretation and a lot of preconceived notion of what actually goes on with the trips, and or not with the trips, rather, but with your challenge. Mm-hmm. I know all I've heard is that it's, you know, under whatever parameters Randy sets, and if you don't follow this and that.
From people who don't read the challenge. They don't read the challenge. They make up their own rules. It's like the ones who say, oh, I've looked and I can't find $1 million. It doesn't really exist. It does exist, but they don't ask for the evidence. As I said a moment ago there, we've never had one person ever actually ask to get a copy of the document. Not one, ever. In all the years that it's been around, and we've had the, as I say, I've got a drawer in the other room here that has the most recent statement from Goldman Sachs accounting for the $1 million and where it is and what it is and how much it amounts to and such, and I print them up every month as soon as the Linda gets the latest statement. I tear the other ones up, throw them away, and I put the new ones in the box there. I make 10 or 20 copies of it, put them in the box. I'm not going to start. I'm going to keep on making 20 copies of it. It's ridiculous. I'll maybe make one copy of it and stick it in there in case anybody wants it.
Well, how do I get a copy? I'd like to have a copy for myself so that way I've got it to say I'm the first to actually ask for a copy.
That's a good idea. Okay.
And I can read it to the people that call in or email me and say you're a fake.
All you do is you give me a fax or a mailing address, whatever you want. I'll send it to you by fax. I'll send it to you by mail, whatever you want, and I will send you a copy.
All right, I will do that. And you know what? I've got a couple of people that I feel I'm secure in some of their abilities that they're able to produce EVPs and some of these things. I'd like to see about doing that and perhaps even being witness there as it occurs. I don't know. How do you, when you set the parameters, I know you don't, but I mean, when they set the parameters, are they allowed to have certain people there with them?
They can have any number of people. They can have a dog and pony show. I don't care. As long as it doesn't interfere with the demonstration.
Okay.
I just want something that's intact and legitimate. If we have somebody there with a secret transmitter in their eyeglasses or something like that, I'm going to make a fuss. I'll tell you
no doubt.
But we have the means to test for that sort of thing, and we have, and we've never detected anything because people who come to us don't try tricks. They're just self-deluded. They think they've got this going, and they really don't have anything.
I know when we were talking about Lou Gentile's challenge, and basically what it had come down to for EVPs was that you would create, what was it, like 100 envelopes with commonly used words in them, and just it was basically holding up the envelope and asking the spirit to say whatever the word was on that card in the envelope.
Well, it's better than that, though, you see. If we did it with, say, a dozen envelopes, and what I would do is I would give the people who do the experiment the list of the 12 words that are in the 12 envelopes. And I would say, it's one of those. Have the spirit indicate which one of those. Because if I just said any word in the English language, that would be hundreds of thousands of possibilities.
Definitely.
In this case, the chances would be 1 in 12, or whatever number of envelopes that we would use. And we would know mathematically what the chances are. And the spirit certainly should be able to tell us which one of 12 words, or 15 words, or whatever is in an envelope.
And would it be just a one in and out shot, or do you give them three different sets of controls?
It would have to be statistically significant, that's all. It depends on what they claim it would be. You see, again, it depends on the claim. If they say it's 100% correct, hey, we don't have any problem. If they say We can get twice the odds that we normally would. Well, we would use more than 12 objects in that case. It all depends on the claim that they make. We designed the test to go along with the parameters that are needed. They have to beat 1 in 1,000 odds on the preliminary test, and they have to beat heavier odds on that on the formal test. But we've never decided that because no one has ever passed the formal test.
All right, fair enough. Let me ask you, I know your stand on Uri Geller is pretty tight. You're not a big fan of the gentleman. And again, there I go using the word gentleman, right? And,
yes.
Have to be careful with that. Why? What exactly is it that is just your disdain with this gentleman? Why? Because he just claims that he has these amazing abilities to do things, and you know it to be not true. Is that what just kind of gets under your skin? Or is it that people buy into what he says so readily?
He has cost a lot of people their careers. He's cost a lot of people their security, their emotional security. He's betrayed a lot of scientists all around the world. And if he were ever to admit now that it had been all just a little joke that he was playing on the public, he would be sued left and right by even governments who have spent millions upon millions of dollars to study the Geller effect because they chose, through some rather unwise scientific effort and authorities, they chose to believe that he was telling them the truth. And they spent millions to investigate the effect and found nothing. So he could be sued by these people who had relied upon his truthfulness. And I think that's not going to happen. Now he wants to be known, I suppose you know, he wants to be known as a mystifier but not a psychic. He won't accept that terminology. Now that to me is a very sure sign that he's trying to withdraw from this. He's not going to get out of this, though, because if he ever went to the press and said, hey, it was all a joke and I fooled everybody for all these years, then he would have the force of the law descend on him, because I think these people would bring civil cases against him immediately. He cost a lot of people their reputations and their careers, a lot of them, and a lot of organizations, schools and different commercial businesses and such, cost them millions of dollars.
What is your take on somebody like the amazing Kreskin?
He's an entertainer. He's using the same methods that all mentalists have done over the years. Not a mystery to the magicians. That's straight out of the book.
Well, give us two for the listeners that are out there and are not real familiar with the terminology. With all the different terms that are being thrown around, there's psychics, mystifiers, mentalist. What does a mentalist do? That
a mentalist, by definition in the trade, is a magician who appears to be doing what he does by using the mind rather than using magic tricks. He appears to. But what he's doing is standard magic tricks that have been in the books for, in some cases, for centuries. Actually, since the 1600s, they've written up tricks that can be done, that appear to be done with the mind. That's what mentalists have been used. And they have not really moved up the scale at all. I don't see many mentalists. There are some, but not many mentalists who are actually using the advantages of technology. As I said earlier, MIT Media Lab has all kinds of stuff there that mentalists could use. But they're not about to part with them to the public, of course, and certainly not to a mentalist. But they could be used to produce effects that would blow the average magician's mind right out of the water. It's incredible. They have wonderful, they have sensing technologies there, electronic means, that are just almost unbelievable, but not quite.
Well, I'm curious with doing things. I mean, what's blown me away is watching Kreskin when he one of his deals that he does for people is you hire him to come there.
And he hides the...
You hide the check, and if he can't find the check, you don't pay him, and if he can, he find it. What are they reading that they're getting that kind of deal from?
That technique is known as Hellstromism. A fellow named Alexander Hellstrom developed it in the 1800s. He was famous for doing that. He would find objects in public buildings, for example. Someone would go into a library and conceal a book someplace in the library, and he'd have to go around the library until he found it. It's a method of reading body reactions. There's a fellow named... Ellie Schneider. I think Ellie Schneider. He came from Israel some years ago. I don't even know if Ellie is still with us, but he gave a demonstration at the Magic Castle in Hollywood years ago that I witnessed, and we could see what the gimmick was, how he was doing it, but it was astonishing, really. He was very, very sensitive to people's unconscious, involuntary movements. After they hid the object in the room, after he was out of the room, when he came back into the room, he was able to pick up from the person who had hidden the object, certain subtle physical signals that led him in the right direction. And he was astonishingly accurate. He did wonderful things. And he leveled with us, of course. When we asked him questions about the technique, he told us.
Do you feel, when you're meeting with people, do you have, because of the work that you've done and because of understanding mentalism and understanding people's reactions, do you have kind of an unfair advantage? Are you able to read when people are just out and out BSing you on certain things? Are you able to pick up on that? Not just, hey, I'm smart and I know better than this.
No, my BS detector is very finely tuned.
It is?
React to the tiniest signal.
And do you attribute that to just because you understand person
experience and body reactions and such too, by attitudes? I see what they avoid and what they embrace and how they're trying to misdirect the attention and whatnot. It's pretty transparent. When you've been in the, of course, hey, I'm in my 80th year, and I started this when I was about 12 years of age, so I'll let you do the subtraction.
How easy are people to fool?
Well, very easy. It depends on their attitudes. If they're woo-woo people who believe in these things, particularly if they're religious, because to believe in religion means you don't have any evidence to support what you're believing in. You just decided that you'd prefer to believe this. And if you're that kind of person, then you will prefer to believe this sort of thing, too, because one miracle is as good as another.
You know, what I found interesting, too, is when you mentioned the fact that, the gentleman that went to see the psychic and, she said the name Doris, and the psychic had never actually said the name.
And he had the recording, remember? He's
right.
The one who gave me the recording.
Right.
So he knows from studying the recording that she never said the word Doris, that he did. But he doesn't want to know that, you see.
Right, he wants the connection and the belief in the paranormal to be there.
He needs it to be paranormal, that's right.
Right, he wants to, there's that want and belief. I'm curious, now there are, I've watched some mediums that I've seen do readings, and the issue I've always taken with people out there, the as I call them, the witchcraft people are Randy, I'm picking up on this and you're really depressed. And what I need is, as a commitment to show that you want this change and you want this off, is I need $200. I'm going to burn it with a special candle that will release the good energies and free you of this. And the $200 doesn't stay with you.
Pardon me, I was yawning.
Exactly. That's what it gets into. Now, I've seen, though, mediums that will do readings, they pick the heavy set girl with the greasy hair who can't make direct eye contact and stares at the floor, and they can gather, you've got a grandparent that's passed over, it's a grandfather, he loves you, and he says, you're being so hard on yourself, you're so beautiful inside you, and I watch them cry and they feel better, and all of a sudden their heads are up and their eyes are making contact. I've seen people utilize that form of reading to help people, where therapists and psychologists have been working on this person's ego and id for years, taking, $150 every session, and they're not doing any help that this person did in one session with the dead grandpa telling the story.
So you lie to people and you make them feel better. That's the technique. That's the process.
Right. Now, do you find a problem with that, of people utilizing it in that form to help people with the grieving process, to let go? Do you see that as a form of in a sense, entertainment or therapy for people as well?
No, it's a swindle. Because if they believe that, they're going to go back. They're going to go back to some other charlatan out there who will really take their money and lead them astray and destroy them emotionally. A lie is a lie is a lie. It's never the truth. And if you use a lie to accomplish something that temporarily is going to make someone feel better, it's like being cured of a disease. They say, I felt much better after it. But were you healed? Do you want to feel better, or do you want to be free of the disease? That's the question. You've got to answer that for yourself.
So those type of people even bother you with what
out
doing?
Yes, because that's exactly what happens with these people. They there's a thin edge of the wedge. They get encouraged by that sort of thing, and then from then on, they're woo-woo advocates. They're going for it. They need it. They pursue it, and they'll spend any amount of money or time on the thing. But they won't do anything to improve themselves and actually get better from this situation or recover from it. No, they'll go for people that tell them things they like to hear. That's very dishonest and it's cruel.
That's the thin part of the razor that I have a hard time justifying as well, because I do see people that do that type of work and I think are doing nothing more than just a cold read. But I've also seen a lot of the people that get help from it, and they haven't gone back for readings. They just needed the goodbye and the hug, psychic hug or whatever it was.
Might very well be. That has not been my experience, but it may be yours.
Right. Well, addiction, again, people are easily addicted by the different realms, and I could see that a problem. And we've talked to people that are mediums or claim to be psychic on our shows in the past and asked them, do you get people that are addicted to you? And they say, yeah, and that they try to dissuade people from, you know, repeat visits. You know, they do it a couple times, and then they say, you know, really, you shouldn't lean on me for all of this. You should really try to live your life and experience things.
Okay, that shows a certain amount of integrity there, I would say, then.
Well, great. Yeah, and that's... You see, that's what I'm having trouble. I've seen some things and I've heard things that I can't wrap my head around. There's an amazing couple out of California, Michael and Marty Perry, that are a medium couple. The husband works like John Edward, doing the readings and connecting you. The wife draws the spirits she sees around you or in the room. And doing an interview with them for a show that was aired, they were doing a reading for another lady in our audience, but as the... Marty that was drawing the photos, she drew a picture dead on of my grandfather. There's no posted pictures of my grandfather. I don't look like a young version of my grandfather, which was my skepticism at first, was looking at it and thinking, you know, if you look at enough people in the audience and draw a picture of them old, you're going to hit somebody that looks pretty much like their grandparents.
Yeah, sure.
This grandfather looked nothing like me. A couple of the other pictures she drew looked nothing like the person that claimed that was a relative. And they're able actually to show photographs of the relatives that look spot on to the person that Marty has drawn. You know, that to me is an astounding fact. I had a reading with them just to see how things were going. And some of the stuff, you know, I understand body language and giving away certain things, but when they're able to go into parts that nobody can research on me, nobody can know, and they know these things that I'm not giving away at, which I have reviewed the tapes, and I can see where there's been times I've led some mediums into a point where I'm giving them too much information, and then there's times where I don't say a word other than okay.
Well, okay. With that picture gag, we did a thing in the UK many years ago. I forgot how long ago, quite some time ago, when there was somebody out there whose name I can't think of now. It was a woman who did these sketches and in front of audiences, and we had her make a sketch for our audience. She was backstage doing the sketch, and then we asked the people in the audience to whom did it apply. Pardon me. And about, maybe a quarter. I've forgotten the figures now. I could look them up for you. About a quarter of the people held up their hands, and then they all looked at one another and laughed because they realized that there were so many there that it would be hard to find somebody that didn't agree with the drawing that she made of this elderly gentleman with a small beard. Of course, in England, beards are much more common than they are here, but particularly on an older generation. And so what we were doing is we were forcing her to do it for somebody that she didn't know was actually pointed out. We had it for a certain person in the audience, and that person was one of the ones who held up their hand saying that it agreed with their deceased relative, but a lot of other hands went up as well. And as I say, they looked at one another, looked around the audience, and they laughed and drew their hands down again because they realized that what the gimmick was. It would apply to anybody. But when they specified, not to anybody, but to a lot of people, but when they specify a specific person in the audience, you'll often get people turning to one another and saying, you know, that could be my grandfather. It's astonishing. Right.
Well, that's what's, and I was waiting for that too, because we've watched Michael and Marty do large group sessions, and I thought that same thing. You know what, this person looks like it could be, and then they draw the picture, but only one person in the audience lays claim to the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, that's just been really strange to see something like that. And I try, you know, my quest is to get the answers, to understand these things. I don't buy into everything that I see out there. I don't buy into this, even though I've had experiences in my life I can't explain. And I've seen things that I don't know how to wrap my head around. That, to me, you know, seeing things like that, I'm looking for answers. And that's why I think there's a need for James Randi's and Chris Angels that are willing to expose some of these flaws so that we can try to get more to the answers.
Well, remember what you just said there. You said that one person held up the hand. But remember, when that one person holds up a hand, nobody else will hold up a hand at that point because I guess he's got a better claim to it than I have. There may be other people there. If you ask the question, how many people here, if you haven't got all believers in the audience, in most cases when these audiences are assembled, they're all believers, and they wouldn't dare raise their hand if they saw one person raise their hand. They keep their hand down and then tell people afterwards, perhaps, you know, it's also applying to me, very close to my grandfather. So when you see the one hand go up, you don't hold your hand up in an audience like that. Remember that.
I understand that. Tim, you have a question?
Well, Mr. Randi, it's actually a two-part question. One, you've mentioned now that a couple of times about people having to be a believer or be particularly religious in order to to believe in some of the stuff.
No. I said that in connection with me doing a reading.
Okay.
They'd have to believe that I had the power, or they're not going to go for it.
Okay. Are you yourself particularly religious? And you don't have to answer that if you're not comfortable.
I've always answered that. I am not religious at all. I don't have any superstitions of any kind. I walk under ladders. I do all kinds of dangerous things. I go out and have parties on the 13th of the month. If you can imagine how daring that is. But for a lot of people, this is very daring.
Right.
You don't know how many times people will say, oh, no, that's the 13th. No, let's make it the following week. And I've had this happen all the time. And I just sigh in desperation because they actually take this sort of thing seriously.
And I guess the second part of this question is, as much like a police officer who might get a little jaded by humanity once they've seen so many terrible acts, you've been in the business since you were young. Is it possible or entirely possible that maybe you've become jaded to possibilities throughout the years of possible paranormal activity, or do you still keep a somewhat open mind?
Oh, I have an open mind, but I don't hold it open so far that my brain's followed. I mean, really, you can have far too open a mind where you're going to accept everything that comes along, and there are a lot of woo-woos out there who do accept everything as being absolutely genuine. I'm willing to be shown. Remember, that's a $1 million carrot that I'm waving on the end of the stick. If you can do it, come and get the carrot. Now, the fact that they don't come and get the carrot, or they don't even try to get the carrot, doesn't prove anything to the contrary. That doesn't mean they can't do it or that it doesn't exist. I never say that it can't be done or that it doesn't exist. I simply say, if it does, come and get the $1 million.
Let me go back to one thing real quickly when we were talking about UFOs. There's a location that I've been to in Trout Lake, Washington. I went out there over a year and a half ago, and I had an experience and saw something in the sky that, you know, 2 years later I can't wrap my head around. And it wasn't a weather balloon. It wasn't a kite. It wasn't a, you know, I mean, I saw something move, some kind of creature move between a set of trees up at the top as though it was gliding or flying through the sky.
Mm-hmm.
I ran towards it with my lights, looking for screens, laser projector, anything that could have been causing this. There was nothing there to be found. I don't want to believe what I saw because it was so weird. Now,
have no explanation for this, right?
None.
Okay. Does that mean that it doesn't have an explanation? Because you said earlier that you saw things that you can't explain, but that is, I think it's an incorrect statement, that you can't explain at the moment. Now, I can show you a card trick, for example, and show it to you many times over until suddenly you said, aha, and you solved the thing. But if you said from the beginning, this card trick can't be explained, that would have been incorrect then, wouldn't it? If you get more information about a situation, you often do have an explanation. So never say, this is something that can't be explained. You can often say, I can't explain it, but you should also add, presently, at this moment, I can't explain it, because an explanation may occur to you.
Well, and I agree with that. But if people were going to have you out for a challenge, for a UFO challenge, to see something like this, to bring you to a location like this, what would it take for James Randi to say, oh, that's crazy? How would you know that it isn't some kind of government flight path for some testing?
I wouldn't know.
Craft? Right, but what would be the parameter for you if they just said, there are things flying over our property, you know, $1 million challenge or not, I'd like you to come see this. Would you pay $1 million to go to a site where they supposedly see UFO activity without having any way to prove that that's an alien craft and maybe
absolutely,
not some form of government?
Absolutely. All they have to do is prove that there's no other explanation for it. You see, they don't think of that approach. There are all kinds of things I see in the sky that I can't explain at the moment. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't eventually be able to explain, or if I put a telescope on it or an infrared camera, I might see exactly what it is. But at the moment, there are many things that I can't have an explanation for immediately. That doesn't mean there isn't an explanation. So if they were to produce something like that, something to reappear in the sky, I'd simply say, that is something I don't understand. Can you establish that there is no explanation for it, an ordinary explanation that is not paranormal or extraterrestrial? And of course they can't. But they tend to assume that it is.
Okay, so UFOs are probably the least likely of an item that somebody could have you come investigate that would ever be paid out. Because, as you said, at this point, we have no way of discerning. Is it a governmental flight plane that we're just not privy to? Is it an optical illusion of a reflection off of this or that or the other to create these type of things?
Yes, and by the same token, they should not assume that it is something that doesn't have a ready explanation, because they can't show that it doesn't have a ready explanation.
we've only got a few minutes left here. I appreciate the time you've given us tonight. Let me ask you, do you believe, or would you honestly, the amazing Randy, would you really like proof for yourself of something
care.
Out there, of an afterlife or an afterworld or
I simply
UFO?
I don't care. I don't have a motive. All I want to know is what's true. That's all. Bottom line, I want to know what the facts are. I don't care whether it's true or not. If it's true, that would be a wonderful revelation to me. I would celebrate the fact, but I would have found out something that I didn't know before. And any time I discover something like that, something that my cat can do that I didn't know she could do, that's wonderful. I say, oh, wow, I didn't know my cat could do that. I didn't know that any cat could do that. It's a discovery, and it's a moment of titillation, and I enjoy it. A discovery, but of a new fact, is always very exciting. And if it were something like a UFO or a psychic power of some kind, I would say, wow, now it would cost me $1 million. That's true. Not cost me $1 million. It would cost the foundation $1 million. It's not my million, you understand. But the point is, anything like that that you discover that's new is a bit of knowledge that makes you a better person, a more knowledgeable person. And I think that's important.
I agree. Can you tell us what the future of your foundation, and for people that want more information on your foundation, what is the website that it can go to?
Funny you should ask. www.randi.org. And Randy is spelled R-A-N-D-I.
Right, randi.org. And there you have updates and stories and things
yes,
that's going on.
And it's completely archived, and all you have to do is go to the box in the upper right-hand corner there. Any subject you'd like to know about, enter it in there. And ask for it. There are two selections there, on the web and on the Randy site. And go to the Randy site, and everything that I've ever mentioned about that will be available to you immediately. There may be hundreds of entries under each one.
Go ahead, Tim. You have the last question here for him?
Yeah, Mr. Randy, I'm just curious. When it's time for you to sort of lay down your sword, so to speak, on this entire thing, who do you see as your successor?
That's a good question. We've been talking just in the last few days in Las Vegas at our conference. We were talking to a few people who are headed for that position, and we don't know if it's going to be an individual or a board. We haven't quite decided yet. I have a rare combination of talents, of course, and we have to be able to meet that.
Would you look at another magician such as like Penn Jillette or maybe Chris Angel or somebody like that, somebody who might know the ins and outs of certain amounts of trickery?
Oh, I certainly would consider that, but of course these are very busy professional people, and maybe they haven't got the time that I have. I could have gotten to their status as a magician a long time ago if I had decided to go that way. But frankly, I'm very, very happy with the way things are right now.
Do you have any upcoming viewings where people can come see you, meet with you, hear what you have to say about this?
Well, we have a timetable on our website, and people can refer to that. It usually announces my upcoming lectures. In many cases, these lectures are not available to the public, unfortunately, but you can look in on there at the current events section and see what's happening.
All right. Do you know, just off the top of your head, I had heard rumors that you're going to be at Dragon Con this year.
Yeah, I'll be at Dragon Con. I've never done that. It's going to be interesting at the end of August. Yeah.
Great. Well, we'll definitely see you there then. I'm going to be out at Dragon Con as well. So to be,
you'll look like a dragon, will you?
Great. Oh, yeah, I might. I'll be out there. I'd like to shake your hand, say hi to you, and get an opportunity to just meet after the last couple of years of having you on. I appreciate your graciousness and the time that you've spent with us this evening, sir, and, you know, continued success with all that you do. And, you know, again, I'm hoping I can throw a couple of these people that I have been astounded by towards you to see if they're willing to take the challenge and actually step up and move forward on this, because I think there are a few things out there that I would love answers for, and I would just love to see them do it.
Don't be surprised if they don't take you up on it.
I'm not anymore. That, after Lou Gentile debacle, I was
just going to say, remember the name Gentile. Keep that in front of you.
That I've got it emblazoned in my brain. I trust I won't forget that that debacle again. But I want to thank you because you were great on that show. And again, people, go back, review. I think it was May of 2006. Listen to the show. Randy was fantastic. He came on very professional, explained what would have to be done, how it would be done. And then Lou Gentile came on for the second half an hour and acted like a complete ninny, backpedaling the whole time. And I got to laugh too, Mr. Andy, I'll tell you, the next night on his radio show, he was on just lambasting me for who did I think I was to question him and this, that, and the other. And I showed up in his chat room during the show and he flipped into a complete ass kiss and started, oh, well, Dave did his job the way he had to. He had to ask the tough questions. And I even got on the air with him and said, you know, geez, I'm surprised by this because, you know, you've been barking at Randy for so long that you wanted this and he finally agrees to do it. Now you're going to make him wait. That just seems so strange. I lost complete respect for the gentleman watching that happen. So I've got to guess that that's just got to be part of the fun for you doing what you do, is watching these people just fold like a house, you know, house of cards.
Well, it certainly is. And Dave and Tim, I want to thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Thank you all for tuning into the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're going to be back with another amazing hour right after this.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.